better off. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 75 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hello. You know, I have to do that voice every time.
Radio voice. We have a kind of like lighter pod for you guys this week. It's spring training, and it's been a while since we've actually talked about the Mets. So we're going to do that because the last couple of weeks we had the wonderful interview with Andrea Williams, which if you haven't listened to it, I don't plug our own show all that often, but
don't listen to us.
Exactly. It's not about listening to our show. It's about listening to Andrea Williams. You guys absolutely should listen to her. I could listen to her talk about baseball for hours and hours. So you guys should listen to our interview with her from last week. It is fabulous. And then the week
before, read her book.
And read her book, Baseball's Leading Lady. And the week before that, we had our raffle, which went awesome. The prize winners have been picked and the prizes have been sent. Minus one, I promise. I promise I am sending the one prize, but we're photoshopping Mike Cameron's head over Jose Reyes's head in one of the plaques. So I'm still working on that. But other than that, the rest of them have all been sent out. So it was a fabulous success. Thanks again to everyone who donated. It was awesome. But yeah, as a result of the past couple of weeks being like non-Mets related stuff, we haven't talked about the Mets in a while, so much so that the Mets actually made a signing since the last time we talked about the Mets. The last major signing that the Mets made this offseason was that they signed free agent starting pitcher Taijuan Walker to a 2-year, $20 million deal plus a player option for 2023. I think this was a really good move. The Mets desperately needed another starter, and they finally got it in Taijuan Walker. You know, he was pretty much, he and Jake Odorizzi were the last two free agent starters available, more or less, other than like the NRI types. So it's good that they snagged one of those guys who is still left because they really needed one more guy to fill out their rotation. They have good depth, but they desperately needed that kind of fifth guy. So they have that in Taijuan Walker. He actually pitched today in spring training, looked pretty good. He gave up some runs, I think, but like, you know, it's his first start. Like, you know,
it's spring training.
So Taijuan Walker is an interesting player. He's only 27 years old, I think. 27, 28. He's in the prime of his career, but because he recently had Tommy John and he was on kind of the like slow end of Tommy John recovery, as Tommy John recoveries go, so he missed almost like two full seasons from that. And then obviously we had the shortened 2020 season, so he just like really hasn't pitched much in the past 3 years. So that's really the biggest concern with him, is going to be health. But when he's healthy, he's quite good. So like, hopefully if he's healthy, he can be good. And the thing that makes sense, that makes this make sense from the Mets perspective, I think, is that really the Mets just need him to pitch enough innings until Noah Syndergaard comes back. And then like, you know, he just needs to hold out till then, and then they'll have another starter back. So they hopefully won't need him to pitch the workload that would be too much for him. So I think it's a good move on their part.
And he just needs to be better than Rick Porcello, Michael Wacha, and Steven Matz, basically. Like, that's who he's replacing. And he's got such, I mean, Matz probably still has upside, but his upside is, I think, higher than any of theirs. Where this wasn't like a Porcello signing. Like, he's legit. Like, he has potential to be, you know, a good middle of the rotation starter, which is like what Allison said, what you need until Noah Syndergaard comes back.
I think it's just what we need in general, and I share Allison's concerns, and I think it's a general tenor among Mets fans, at least the ones that I've eyeballed, which is the comments on Mason Avenue. Like, everybody's happy that he's here. He's a great starter if he stays healthy. And that's really going to be the key thing here. Will he stay healthy? Will he stay healthy enough until Syndergaard gets back? hope
and
he does.
It seems like he should. Like, it was the Tommy John was his main injury, and he was pretty much healthy all of last year. Granted, it was a shortened season, but wasn't like he just could never come back. Like, he was able to make it back onto the field.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just that small sample size is a small sample size. Yeah. So we can't really, we'll get a good look at him this season.
But yeah. We saw what happened with Wheeler too. Like, the further he moved away from Tommy John, he had a rough recovery too.
Yes.
So it's not like he can still, like I said, there's upside still to him.
I was going to say, Jacob DeGrom won the Cy Young twice. Granted, he was like, he had his Tommy John in 2011, I think. So, but so, how many
and
years later?
Can we just talk about 7 years later after he signed?
Yes, 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 yes.
That was the sweetest. Like, I was like, oh.
Yes, for those of you who are not online or didn't see the tweet, right after Taijuan Walker, and Taijuan Walker is like a seemingly like a lot of our players on the Mets, he's very online, and yeah. He was kind of like kind of trolling people like almost throughout like the late winter / early spring. Like he tweeted something like when there were rumors about where he might sign, he later tweeted something like, just woke up, what I miss, or something. And then like he later tweeted something from like on the first day of spring training, I think he was not yet like when pitchers and catchers reported, like the very first day, he had not yet signed, or at least not officially. And so he tweeted like a picture from like a golf course and was like, what's up?
Yes.
And so right after he signed with the Mets, he tweeted like a picture of a wine bottle, and it was a Tom Seaver bottle of wine, because, you know, as Mets fans know, the late Tom Seaver in his retired life was really into making wine, and had a huge vineyard out in California. And so, Taijuan Walker tweeted a picture of one of the Seaver wines, which I thought was like, and a really good nod to the Mets, and like that was really cool to see.
Not only that, he got a hold of one of those things.
Yeah, right.
there's a years long wait list for them. Wow. And that was even before he passed away.
Huh. I didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, like, it doesn't surprise me.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know.
The only reason I know this is because I'm on this list.
Of course you are. I mean, that does not surprise me at all. Nor
unless somebody sent him his bottle as a welcome, maybe, like Cohen or...
It's possible, yeah. Like, I assume possible, that yeah. Steve Cohen has ways to get a hold of Tom Seaver wine if he wants it.
Bottle.
It's a good signing. I'm really happy about it.
We also have to talk about his number.
Oh, yeah. So Taijuan Walker is a guy who is known for having, like, really crazy uniform numbers. So he had double zero on... Has he pitched with zero and double zero both?
Hang on.
I think it might just be double zero, because Stroman, I know, was zero.
Yeah, Stroman was zero. But yeah, so last season, Taijuan Walker was double zero. And so he wanted to potentially be double zero again, but he gave that up because he said that's Mr. Met's number, which is true. And so instead of conflicting with Mr. Met, he chose 99 instead. So he will be number 99, which I always love weird.
He was 99 with the Diamondbacks and the Mariners. And he was double zero with the Blue Jays.
Awesome. Yeah, we love to see that. I love like weird uniform numbers. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, Justin Toscano has a really good article about it today.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Because there's a really good quote by Walker in there. Because as we know, Turk Wendell was the last one to wear 99. So, you know, to welcome him, and which I also didn't realize is they're both their initials are TW.
Oh, yeah. That's very funny.
That's even better.
Yeah, I didn't put it together until like I saw an SNY tweet like with both of their names in it. I was like, oh, like it wasn't earth shattering or anything. I was like, huh, that's kind of a fun coincidence. But yeah, so Turk Wendell like sent him the shark tooth necklace, which but his are made out of turkey and wild boar, which to me is very suspicious because
boar.
Yeah, because but we also know that Todd Frazier had the issue with the turkeys.
Yes.
So was this? I want to know, Turk. Was this on purpose?
Yeah. Is this like a revenge tour of all the animals that have wronged the Mets?
Or maybe it's reverse jujuing.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah,
reversing all the bad karma that those animals brought on this team.
Wow, yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah, I want to know what, like, it was some kind of turkey something. I have to find the tweet. I think it was Justin Toscano that tweeted it.
That's amazing. What
the new necklace was made of. But then Taiwan Walker said he would wear it because he said it meant a lot to the fans. So I was like, oh. So
Did he wear it today, I think?
No, he didn't.
Okay. Mm-mm, not today. I
thought I read somewhere that he did. Maybe I'm crazy. Probably no, I am.
Because he said I'm wearing it next game. Okay.
But yeah, so we like it's a good signing. The Mets really needed this one more starting pitcher, so that's really good. And we're happy he's here. And it's just like, I don't know. In addition to him being like a really good fit as far as like what he can bring to the table on the field, I just really like that he further adds to this just being a really fun group of guys to root for. Like, he seems like a really good dude, and I'm really excited to root for him. So.
Yeah, and they seem happy to be here. Like, Jordan Yamamoto was, and he looked pretty good the other day, too. He seems, like, really excited to be here. Like, I think he's a really good depth signing.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, we probably talked about this, but it's something the players have even mentioned now, too, that you have quality depth at almost every position. Like, you have real major leaguers, not, like, you know, just like we've
the
mentioned,
quad A signings.
Yeah, a quad A kind of hope he doesn't get shellacked kind of signing. So, like, I like Jordan Yamamoto, and he's another one that has upside.
Yeah,
I just like all of them because I think they're making each other kind of compete. But I don't like the word compete. They're bringing out the best in each other, both on the field and kind of off the field. There's a really great chemistry with this team right now building. And I think part of that is because of the culture change in the clubhouse. I just remember Syndergaard tweeting last year, I think, that Cohen would treat the players like actual, like, human beings rather than just commodities.
Yeah.
And I think we can see that, the beginnings of that, at least in this spring training.
Yeah, it's been nice to see. Speaking of depth, we do have one bit of bad news. We already have our first, Seth Lugo is technically the first bad injury news the Mets have had, but they have further bad injury news. So Jose Martinez, who the Mets brought in as sort of like, you know, a depth signing, has a torn meniscus and will miss 4 months, unfortunately. I saw the injury. It was bad. I was watching the game. It was a televised game against the Marlins, and he was sort of...
Freaking Marlins.
Yeah.
It's always the freaking Marlins.
On Sunday afternoon, like, there was a ball down the line, and Martinez, is, as everyone knows, is not known for his defensive abilities. And so he was going after the ball, like, that was toward the line. He was playing first base. He was going after the ball toward the line, and his cleat seemed to catch awkwardly, either on the bag or like in the dirt. There might have been a rivet or something, and he twisted his knee real bad. And like he basically, it was weird. It was one of those things where, like, normally when you have like a really bad like a ligament tear like that, like, normally the guy like falls to the ground in a heap and like doesn't get up. He was like still standing the whole time, but he like froze in his tracks and didn't move, and he was only putting weight on like the one leg, so he kind of had his leg like half picked up, but he just like stood there and then like hunched over, like he had his hands like on his thighs and was just like hunched over, and like he knew, you could, like, you know when they know it's real bad because they just like instantly deflate, and I could see it in his body language, like he knew it was real bad. And so
did the umpire get in the way, or he crashed into
that was why he kind of had to like change his like path like at the last minute, and that's probably why he ended up like twisting awkwardly, because the umpire was kind of right there, and so he had to like negotiate around the umpire to try to lunge for the ball, and so he sort of like tried to change his path like mid stride, and I think that's what caused it.
But you only have a few seconds to do that. So
exactly
not even a few seconds, microseconds.
Exactly. So he, you know, so he twisted his knee, he was standing there and like he couldn't move at all, and so like he needed help getting off the field, and they didn't even like, they didn't even, so he had a, like, basically Rojas, and it might have been the trainer, might have been someone else, I can't remember, on his other side helping him off the field, and it was so bad that, like, they didn't even take him to the Mets dugout on the other side. They took him to the Marlins dugout because it was on the first base side, closer to where he was. So they took him into the Marlins dugout, like, and you could hear on the broadcast, because the spring broadcasts are like, there's so few people there, and especially now because of COVID.
Hot mics galore.
Yeah, you can like really hear guys when they say stuff on the field on the broadcast a lot of times, and you could hear Luis Rojas saying, "We need a cart, we need a cart," and so that was not great. So yeah, you knew it was bad from the out, and so like that happened on Sunday, and they said he would be reevaluated on Monday, meaning yesterday. And so yesterday we got the news that it was a torn meniscus. I knew it must have been like a torn ACL or MCL meniscus, something, one of those. And so, yeah, he needs surgery, which he will get, I think, over the weekend. Or, like, did he get it already? I don't know. Soon he's going to get surgery, and he'll miss 4 months, which is really, it's really sad for him because, like, he had an actual shot to make the team out of spring. He was, like, a depth signing, a veteran depth signing that, you know, like, a righty bat off the bench, because the Mets, as we've mentioned on this podcast several times, their lineup is pretty left-handed. So they really needed that, like, pop off the bench, and that's what he was going to provide. And, like, the other thing that's sad for him is that, like, he was kind of, like, he had two back-to-back, like, really great offensive seasons, like, elite offensive seasons. Like, I'm talking, like, 140 WRC plus type seasons in 2017 and 2018. And then in 2019, he sort of was kind of just, like, a league average hitter. And then last year, he was dismal. And so, like, he was kind of trying to, like, use this as like a chance to rebound and have like a bounce back year potentially with the Mets off the bench, and like, you know, be able to help them with a clutch home run or two off the bench. And so that is kind of, you know, over now. I mean, like, obviously 4 months isn't the entire year, but it's well over half.
It's a good chunk of the season.
Yeah. And like, it takes a long time to rehab back from something like that. And so obviously he is no longer in the picture as far as the opening day roster is concerned. And what is probably a like connected bit of news is that the Mets are reportedly interested in Michael Franco, and that's probably a direct result of this injury, knowing that this guy who they were relying on as potentially righty bench bat depth is no longer an option. And so they sort of are looking into guys like that, and Michael Franco like profiles is a very similar type of player to Jose Martinez. He's right-handed. He's a one position player is kind of the problem. And I mean, Jose Martinez is, you know, pretty much a DH. He doesn't really have a position either, but Michael Franco pretty much only plays third base, and the Mets have plenty of guys on the team who already can play third base. They have JD Davis, they have Jeff McNeil, they have Jonathan Villar, they have Luis Guillorme. So they have lots of guys who can play third base. So Michael Franco would really be the odd one out if he signed here. But he sort of provides that same role as like a bench pinch hit right-handed hitter sort of thing.
Well, and he has pop. I don't care, but as long as he's not killing the Mets,
yes.
Like, he could be legit awful on the field, and the Mets would like cure his ail, whatever ailed him, every single time.
I know.
He would be
Mets fans. So best.
Maybe when he's on the Mets, maybe that'll help too. I don't know.
Maybe that'll help. Yeah, Mets fans best know Michael Franco for the many years he spent with the division rival Phillies, in which he was a Mets killer. He, you know, like, Michael Franco's a good hitter, but he was not, like, you know, an otherworldly hitter by any stretch of the imagination, but he was against the Mets. He was just killer, Michael Franco. Like, every time he had a clutch hit against the Mets.
Like, going into the series, they'd be like, oh, he's having a down year this year, and then all of a sudden he would be, like, 4-for-5 against the Mets with, like, the killer home run that, like, put them ahead in the seventh inning. It's like, Of course.
It like harkens back to every time like there's a hitter in the slump, the Mets would always fix them.
Oh, they fix them. That's our main job is like to fix slumping, or like a rookie making his debut pitching.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely a confidence booster, because he will shut them down, and almost anybody slumping, the Mets will give them a boost.
Yeah. But Michael Franco, finally was not a Philly last season. It was his first season not with the Phillies. He was on the Kansas City Royals in 2020, and he was their everyday third baseman. He actually played all 60 games. He was the everyday third baseman for the Kansas City Royals. And he was quite good. He like pretty much like a slightly above league average hitter. I think he had like a 108 OPS plus or something like that. So, you know, like solid. But he was due to be paid, you know, something in like, I think the $8 to $10 million range in arbitration, and the Royals, that was too rich for their blood. So they non-tendered him in December. So he's been, you know, kind of a free agent ever since. And so there are reportedly several teams interested in him, not just the Mets. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, their interest in him is clearly a direct, you know, result of this Jose Martinez injury, I think. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, they could use that, like, final righty off the bench that has a little bit of pop, and Franco would be that guy. But other than that, their roster, at least on the position player side, is, like, kind of more or less set. Offense is not what I'm worried about. And like, I feel like watching this first week of spring training games, I feel like my concerns going into spring have only become like bigger, which is like the starting pitching looks very good. The bats look fine. I am highly concerned about the bullpen and the defense, which have been on full display already in spring training 1 week in. Yeah, it's not been great.
What happened to McNeil, man?
Oh, he looks awful at third. Christ.
Like, he didn't used to be that bad. I don't understand what happened.
I think it's just rust. It's the first week. I'm not putting much stock. I don't think he's a third.
They put JD in third.
I don't know. I don't think he belongs there personally.
He's
a second baseman. They need to stop that experiment with him. That's why I hope they do sign Franco, just because I think they do need a defense plus guy over there at third.
He's okay. And like, they have Guillorme. So like, Guillorme has looked fantastic in the field. He's already made two or three really good defensive plays. And Guillorme looks really good with the bat too. And he was already, you know, like on the upswing last year. Like, he was starting to look like a legit, like, he was always like a back and forth type of guy who always had the defensive skills, like some of the best hands I've ever seen. In the field, he's always had those defensive skills.
Hands
but
in the dugout.
Yeah. catching flying bats. But his bat was just never quite there. And last season it finally looked like he would hit enough to be like a legit major league caliber player. And it looks like that's continuing. He's been tearing it up so far this spring. He looks great. I'm really happy. Yeah. He's a lock. He's an absolute lock to make the team. And I think that he'll be very useful for the Mets this year. I think they desperately need him. Especially
your seventh inning replacement.
Yeah, he's your infield defensive replacement. And VR is also that. Like, he's a pretty good defensive player. Not as good as Guillorme, but he's good.
VR had a bomb the other day.
Oh my god, that was a blast that he hit the other day. I was like, that's power that I haven't seen from him in a while. That's nice, cool.
As long as he's not driving poor Keith Hernandez crazy, swinging a ball for him. Keith was having fits. Well, was that when he was on the Marlins?
It was last season. He was on the Marlins. And they were playing the Mets, and he just had an awful series, a really bad series. And it was just the lack of fundies. Keith was going insane.
No.
Yeah. It was funny because, like, I think a lot of Mets fans, like, that's their most recent memory of Jonathan VR. The Mets signed him, they were kind of like, this guy? But, like, I promise you, like, it was weird when I watched that, because I saw a lot of him on the Orioles, because he was on the Orioles before he was on the Marlins. And I saw a lot of him during those years he was on the Orioles. And, like, he's much better than that series indicates. I mean, he had a bad year last year all around. He was not good, especially after he got traded to Toronto. He was really poor. But I'm hoping that, you know, again, like 2020, what can you take out of it? What can you not? So who knows? But he's been a solid player before that, you know, so
when he's not swinging at ball four every single time. Jesus, I feel like Christ. It was against DeGrom, which I can kind of like give him a pass for, because I can't imagine facing DeGrom is easy. But
well, just ask Michael Conforto. It's easy for him.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, for Conforto it's a breeze, apparently.
I mean, Michael Conforto is a pretty damn good hitter. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, the Mets have, you know, the defensive replacements that they can put in. But that said, like, McNeil's looked really bad at third. Hopefully he won't be playing there all that much. He's a good defender at second. But, like, and obviously Francisco Lindor's an elite shortstop. We've already seen it this spring. He's looked great in the field. He hasn't hit much, but I'm not concerned about that.
It's a week. It's a week, guys.
But the defense has been all around, has been quite poor. Like, not just McNeil. I'm not just picking on McNeil here. Some of the outfield defense. Pilar straight up dropped a ball at one point.
Well, they made two errors on, like, well, there was that double
four
play
errors
that they
in the game the other day.
Yeah, and there was that double play that was totally not a double play.
Yeah, like, the double play that was not.
Umpires, you're in the best shape of your life.
Yeah, well, the umpires.
For the umpires, too. But it's like they were just. It
the umps had
the
dinner reservations or something.
They were making mental errors, like tagging a guy when you don't have the ball, dropping the ball, like, pay attention, like, just catch the ball. It was just, yeah, basic fundies that they were, like, I get it's spring, but did you forget how to baseball in, like, 3 months or however long it was?
Poor Drew, given
this year, it's possible.
Poor Ferguson, he fell down in the outfield during one of the games, and he, like, pulled a Tebow and, like, fell down and failed to catch a ball, and I felt really bad for him, because he's one of those guys who's, like, a career minor leaguer, and it's like, maybe this is the year I'll finally make it, and he just, like, falls down. And, like, you know that, like, that's not normal. Like, he's a professional baseball player. They don't usually fall down. Like, that's, like, a once in a decade mistake that he made on the biggest spotlight that has been on him, you know? Like, poor guy.
I get the wind is blowing and you gotta change directions or whatever, but like you said, you're a professional. Just catch the ball.
Like, I get that the Mets, outside of Lindor, were never going to be, like, the best defensive team in the league, especially in the outfield, given the current outfield alignment. And we read, there was a tweet today that the Mets are still hoping for the DH. It's like, can you stop hoping? And, like, actually, like, you can't build a baseball team based on hope, you guys. You got to actually, like, do stuff. But, like, I know that they were never going to be the best defensive team, but, like, they look real bad, and I'm hoping that this is just cobwebs they're shaking off and they'll get to be, like, you know, at least okay there.
He's trying really hard.
I'm not concerned
really,
yet.
He's trying really hard, and Lindor said he's trying really hard, so that gives
me... What were you saying, Linda? I'm sorry. I'll go after you.
He's trying really hard.
Yes, he is.
The worker is, like, mentoring him.
Yeah, hopefully that'll rub off. I think it will. Yeah,
I think it will. See, Lindor said he was impressed with JD.
You said that with, like, the pride of a mother.
Your man's Lynn. Oh,
Lindor said he was impressed with my JD.
Yeah. My guy over there with Lindor.
I'm not putting too much stock into anything yet until, like, we get to a week before the season starts. If they're still like this, like, a week before the season, I'll be fully concerned. 100%.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet.
On the
I'm not taking the train to Panic City.
On the defensive side, I'm not concerned. Like, a lot of guys are shaking out cobwebs. I mean, we saw the Cardinals make, like, multiple errors today. So, yeah. Like, you
it's
know,
sloppy
wild
football.
Pitches everywhere. Like, it's happening. But the thing
McCann
that...
McCann threw out some runners. So
yeah, McCann's thrown out some runners. He's actually looked quite good behind the plate. So, like, catcher defense for once. Very exciting.
God, it's so weird to see a catcher throw players out.
Yeah, that never happens. Not on the Mets. No. But the thing that I am, like, legit concerned about, and this isn't just based off of 1 week of spring training. This isn't me jumping to conclusions because of 1 week of innings. But, like, I had this concern before, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm concerned about the bullpen. I'm still concerned about the bullpen. That is an area of deep concern. I was kind of at the point with the bullpen where I was like, okay, like, it's not great. I wish they had, because when Seth Lugo went down, they really needed one more guy, and they haven't done it. And so I was like, fine, but if, like, one of Jairus Familia or Dellin Betances can be okay, then they can probably weather the storm until Lugo returns. Both of them in particular have looked dreadful. And I'm like, here it comes. This is not good. I don't like this at all. Dellin Betances looks really bad, and his velocity is just, like, still not there. I mean, like, people have said, and this is true, this was true before, like, Betances is notoriously a guy who, like, takes a long time to ramp up. So, like, early in spring, he always kind of has this period where his velocity is and he looks really bad, and then, like, he can kick things into gear later. But, like, I don't know, given his season in 2020, I'm like, I don't know, I'm concerned.
At least Diaz looks good.
It's true.
He looks fantastic.
He looks real good. Trevor May looked okay today.
And I think Narco was playing a part of that.
Oh, like, amen.
What? That's like the most significant development of the offseason.
Oh, yes. Edwin Diaz bringing back Narco. Amazing Avenue. The staff position on Narco is we are in favor of it.
I mean, and we'll put... And I think we got to post that. I was having trouble posting that video on Twitter of Allison and me dancing after, God, I forget. Was it in, like, July of 2019?
Yeah,
it was literally Jason Vargas' last start. Yeah.
But yes, we were up top dancing a Narco. Because
that was when he didn't have Narco.
Yes, when he didn't have Narco. So
and
we
he
like,
almost
no,
blew it.
It's going to be his walk-off.
He almost blew the game, too. He didn't, yes, but he almost did.
That's why you had to bring the magic of Narco to Citi Field.
Exactly.
Because that magic was missing.
It was funny because we did that video of Narco, and then there's a photo of us afterward. We were just have these, like, stricken, panicked looks on our faces.
Was that the one where Allison's head is, like, on the...
Yes.
Like in front of her. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm hanging on to her for dear life.
Yes. I'm like weeping. Like, and I'm like, my head is like half on the table, and Kellyanne has her arms like on top of my head. Yeah. That's.
And it's like stricken open mouth.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty on my face.
Sure that was the day because I was at that game with my brother, and we met up before the game. And I'm pretty sure driving home, that's when they traded for Stroman.
Yes. I think. Yeah. Yes.
Because I remember getting alerts, I was like, oh God, the Mets made a trade. And I was like, what'd they do? And I was like, oh.
They did something good.
I was like, this is a good move.
A lot happened that day. Wow. That was crazy. Right? Remember when we went to baseball games? Remember when that was the thing?
God, it was so long ago.
It was such an
long, long time ago. I can still remember.
How that music, meaning Narco, used to make me smile.
Yeah, Narco made us smile.
Yeah. Oh. We're so happy that Diaz is bringing back Narco. But other than that, bullpen.
He had it last year, but nobody was there to hear it. So did he really have it?
Yeah, like, the magic doesn't work unless people are there to hear it.
They're fans there.
Yeah.
But
circling back though, talking about like 2020 season stats, I am just me personally, I'm not comfortable basing anything on anyone's stats last year because last year was such a screwed up year. And there's such small sample sizes and the routines were disrupted and no fans. I think that obviously affected things.
I think that had an effect on Pete, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree. Big time. I mentioned this on Jeff and Jarrett's podcast recently about Pete, how I think having the fans back will help him.
Yeah. Yes. But also, that was the best time for him to have his sophomore slump, just because it was a shortened season. No fans were there. And there you go.
Yeah.
So hopefully he comes back strong this year. I mean, he's looking strong thus far.
Yeah, he looks good with the bat, as do like a lot of the players look good with the bat. So I'm very excited. The offense.
McCann has looked fantastic.
I have no concern that the Mets will hit. The Mets will hit. Yeah. I'm concerned about the bullpen. That's my biggest area of concern. And defense, but like, I'm waiting. I'm holding out my panic on that because it's spring. Basically, the rule with both the 2020 stats and spring training a week in for me is if it's good, I put all the stock in it. Yes. And if it's bad, I say small sample size. Mm-mm.
Totally agree. Although I'm very upset they cut good Trevor today.
Yeah. Like,
you know, there was bad Trevor that we won't ever speak about ever again. But he was good Trevor.
He was good Trevor. And he was I put up the first King of Spring Training post today. And like most of the players that are the early like King of Spring Training candidates all got cut today because like Hildy was on the list and like Mauricio and Vientos and Jake Hager and I think Jake Hager.
I honestly have not been able to watch much of the spring training games, but I know PCA got cut. And I was like, I wanted to see them more.
They got reassigned. The guys that got reassigned, so there's a list of guys that got reassigned, which includes like most of the top prospects that were in camp, among others. And those 19 players that got reassigned can still sometimes potentially appear in Grapefruit League games, but they said it's like to differentiate the workouts. It's partially because the minor league season's been delayed, so it's kind of almost like pseudo they sent them to the alternate site. It's almost kind of like that. They're gonna be working out still. They're gonna be there in Port St. Lucie. They're gonna be working out. They're gonna be playing intra-squad games and such.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll like pull one or two of them into a Grapefruit League game. So that's kind of how that's working. There are four guys that actually got legit like cut and sent to AAA. That was Franklin Kilame. Who else? Sean Reed Foley. Basically the like high minors pitching depth guys got sent to AAA. Which like who knows what that really means right now, but they didn't get reassigned.
Oh, is that Pucky?
Pucky. Thomas Sapucky. Yeah, it's basically like the high minors depth guys. It's Sean Reed Foley, Kilame, Sapucky, and there was one other, and I can't remember. He was also a pitcher. So it was those four got like sent to AAA outright. And the rest got reassigned. So yeah, it's kind of a weird time because the minor league season is slightly delayed, and so like there's like weirdness going on. But so they're gonna have the alternate site for like a little bit.
But Hildy deserved a chance.
I know. He struck out six guys. He was leading the team in strikeouts.
Like, and he's a sidearmer. I love funky dudes.
The team leader in strikeouts a week into spring was not Jacob deGrom. It was not Edwin Diaz. No. It was Trevor Hildenberger.
Funky guys that are pitching well. Let us see them a little bit more.
I know, right? In two innings, he struck out six guys. Like all the guys he got out were via the strikeout. He walked a couple guys, but he didn't give up any hits.
Yeah, or Hildy.
Anyway,
he'll be back.
Anyway, the last bit of Mets news before we move on to greater baseball things is good news, which is that the Mets are set to begin extension talks with Francisco Lindor this week. So that's really good news. Hooray! You know, obviously, and I'm not claiming to be an exception here. People were getting very antsy about this, you know. Like, it's, you know, it's irrational. It's our emotions. We just want it to happen. You know, like, every day that goes by, you get a little more worried. And, like, even though you know that you hope it'll happen and you think it probably will happen, but still you're kind of like, when is this happening? Come on. So they're set to begin talks this week. And I think that's a really good sign that they're, like, openly saying they're talking. Because, you know, I think it's kind of like, obviously it's not a guarantee that anything gets done. It's just that they're talking. But the fact that they're saying we're talking and the fact that they like made this trade thinking they could extend means that probably like the only way this doesn't get done is if like they are very far apart on their numbers, which, you know, I have a feeling is not going to be the case. Like, obviously, there's going to be negotiating. The Mets are going to start lower than they should because that's how negotiations work. But, like, if they were really actually, like, hard line that far apart on the numbers, like, they wouldn't have made the trade, I don't think.
Yeah.
In the first
place. Like, they had to have traded him knowing, like, some idea of what it would take. And I think he even mentioned what he was seeking from the Indians. Before, exactly. Like, while he was still there. So they have an idea of
the
what
Mets
he's
know
looking
that number.
For. Yeah. So they, none of this is coming as a surprise to them.
I mean, it's possible that, so like, they know what he was seeking from Cleveland, and it's possible that, like, the, because obviously not no one saw it coming, but like the Fernando Tatis Jr. extension happened like in between, and that was a quite high number. And so, like, it's possible that that might bump up his ask a little bit, given that, like, it's kind of, you know, he's kind of in the same market of elite shortstops that Lindor is in. So it's kind of like Lindor can point to that and say, I want this because he got this. But it won't, in the end, it's not going to be like, it's not like it's doubling his ask or anything like that. It just might bump it up slightly from what, like, he was asking from Cleveland and what the Mets maybe thought. But at worst, it's going to be like a little bit more. But, and I don't think it's going to be a backbreaker or deal breaker or anything like that. So yeah, that's really good news. I'm very excited. I've been saying, my Francisco Lindor jersey is sitting in my cart on MLB.com, and I will hit the buy button the second that it is announced. And I'm just waiting, patiently waiting, not so patiently waiting. And I will buy a Lindor jersey the second it is announced. I'm so excited for him to be a Met.
Yeah, like we said, like, the other intangibles he brings, like coaching JD, like working the camera today. Like,
oh my God, that was just so good.
Just his smile.
Yeah.
His smile's enough for me.
Yeah. And he's been, you know, even Edwin Diaz said they known he used to play with him during the World Baseball Classic, so he knew him. So it seems like he's just fit right in, and he was wearing a Titanic shirt the other day, and like,
amazing.
No. That just made my heart so happy. Like, he's really wearing a Titanic shirt.
Did it make your heart go on?
It made my heart go on. It really did. I was like, he's just amazing on every level. Just, you know, as a fan, as a person on the team, like, he's just the dude you should build your club around and should have no hesitation building your club around.
I feel like the Mets, like, not that the Mets have any shortage of fun guys on their team. Yeah. They don't. They have the Cookie Club. They have Stroman. Like, they have a lot of fun guys on their team. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like ever since, like, Cespedes has been gone, they've been missing that, like, swag factor. Like, Stroman brings a little bit of that, but, like, I feel like
Syndergaard too.
But I feel like Lindor with his jacket and his Titanic shirt and his blue hair, like, it's very much the same, like, Cespedes energy that we've been missing. Cause, like, it's kind of like what, like, you compare, like, Lindor showing up at spring training in that Mets jacket from the movie to, like, yes. Cespedes showing up on the horse. It's, like, very much the same sort of, like, spectacle. And I mean spectacle in a good way. I don't mean it in a negative connotation. Like, it's, you know, it brings that swag. It brings that, like, you know, attention, like, that star power, that, like, look at me, like, I know I'm good and I'm here and I want people to be excited. Like, I love that.
Yeah, like the cool confidence about it.
Exactly.
Too.
Without being, like, you know, obnoxious. Cocky. Like, he's not obnoxious. He's not cocky.
He's
he
not
just like
pitching with one eye closed. Like, he's,
oh,
not
my God.
I thought we were not mentioning that person again.
I mentioned the bad Trevor. Okay.
The bad Jeez, Trevor. Linda. So, like, yeah, but no, Linda's right though. It's like a complete, like, 180, it's like a complete juxtaposition with that. Like, it's the complete contrast. It's the total opposite of, like that is cockiness. This is just being straight up cool.
It's a gimmick.
Cool, like, confidence.
Like, yeah, Lindor's just cool. He's cool.
Yeah, that's just who he is. He doesn't need gimmicks. Like, he's being authentically himself. And he's awesome. He doesn't need, like, a look at me, like, I'm smarter than you, and I'm just doing this bullshit just to get attention. Like, that's what the bad Trevor does. Lindor doesn't need any of that because he's just, you know, being authentically himself, and that draws people to him.
He's not a tryhard.
No,
he's not a tryhard. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, the extension talks go well and go quickly and smoothly for all of our mental health, and that Lindor will be a Met for the long term. I'm very excited. And it's worth mentioning... It's worth mentioning, too, that the Mets did say that, like, they're kind of they're working on the Lindor negotiations first, and then they're going to move to Michael Conforto. It's not like they've completely forgot about Conforto. They actually mentioned him in, like, the same breath. They said, like, we're starting the Lindor extension talks this week. We kind of want to do one thing at a time. Like, we'll do this first, and then we'll start talking to Conforto. So we'll see what happens on that front. I think, like I said on the last pod, I think the Conforto extension is less likely than the Lindor extension, but still there's a good chance of it. I don't think it's like zero or anything like that. It's just Boris, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that they know that's going to be a completely different animal, Scott Boris.
Yeah. But hopefully they both get done.
Yeah.
Syndergaard should get done. Stroman should get done. They all should get done. But, you know.
See, and I just love that in the past we couldn't even think about extending even one of them, and now we can think about extending all four of them.
I know,
like,
right?
That's a possibility. I mean, it's an unlikely possibility, but it's a possibility. It's not totally out of the window yet. Oof,
I think they like really desperately need to hold on to one of Syndergaard or Stroman, because I think this is also what makes both the Carrasco side of the Lindor Carrasco trade and the Walker signing really good moves, is that they're both signed beyond this year.
Yes.
So, like, that provides some continuity that the Mets were desperately lacking before, because, like, basically before they made that trade and then made this Taiwan Walker signing, their rotation next year was DeGrom.
Yeah.
And no one else.
And we can't multiply him as much as we'd like to.
Yeah. So, and as much as we would love to clone Jacob DeGrom five times, trust me, I would love that. We needed some continuity. And so now we at least have two other guys who are currently on the staff who will be on the staff next year guaranteed. I mean, obviously, unless they're hurt or something, but, like, they will be under contract for next year. So having one extending, I would love to extend them both, obviously. I think they should extend both. But I will feel okay, at least, if they can extend one of Syndergaard or Stroman, because then they can have three guys behind DeGrom that are signed beyond.
Well, Peterson.
And Peterson, true. Peterson, I kind of don't count him because he's still, like, pre-arbitration.
So
but he's, you know, he obviously will be on the team again, be in the organization. So, like, but, like, you know, they will have, like, multiple guys under contract behind DeGrom instead of just DeGrom. So, yeah, one of those two guys would be nice. And then Lindor and Conforto. Thank you, please.
Although my brain was, like, making weird leaps, because it does that sometimes because I'm really tired, and you know when you're, like, falling asleep and then, like, a thought pops into your head.
Yes.
So I think maybe that's what happened to me just now. Like, I was like, oh wait, they were really healthy last year, but will that happen again? But wait, the other thing we haven't talked about is them getting rid of Barwis.
Yeah. Yes. So true. I forgot all about that.
It's like the health factor now will also, like, maybe that wasn't just them being lucky last year. Like, maybe it really was, because all of a sudden, whenever somebody came to Mets, all of a sudden they would get hamstring injuries. And I wonder why that was.
Well, Barwis focused, if I recall this correctly, he focused more on strength training, which is really not what you want with a baseball player.
He would have been a fine football coach. He wanted them all to be linebackers, and that's not
that's not the flexible game
as a baseball player.
Flexible,
I mean, he basically trained them
endurance,
he trained them like bodybuilders. He trained them like bodybuilders, and that's like
baseball players aren't bodybuilders.
Exactly. Well, like, that's
Syndergaard especially. Oh god,
that's like I'm sure he was effective at building their muscle mass, but, like, that's not always what you want.
I remember, was it 2017 when Syndergaard's like, oh, I've got all this muscle, blah, blah, blah. And, like, a month later, oblique.
Yep. That was the oblique year. Yep. Oh, my God.
They all need to do yoga.
Which I think DeGrom and Matz, I think DeGrom and Matz both did yoga, if I remember.
I know DeGrom's big.
Oh, my God. DeGrom, what? Oh.
I know that, like, yoga. I know DeGrom was basically, like, and this is why, like, if you look at DeGrom versus Syndergaard and their body types, obviously very different. But, like, I know DeGrom said something like, I don't bother with all that stuff. I just, like, I run. He was like, I run sprints. I was like, of course you do.
Like, he just eats whatever he wants and runs sprints. It's like, okay.
Cool.
Hey, it works for him.
But, like, the larger point is, like, will they find, because I remember a while ago I read an article about how the White Sox secret weapon is their trainer. Like, they have the fewest injuries of, like, any team in the majors. So I'm wondering if, you know, getting rid of Barwis and maybe bringing in not shysters is
not Jeff's friend from college.
Yeah, not Jeff's, like non-nepotism. Will actually play a huge role in, you know, maybe, you know, going for the playoffs. And, you know, injuries happen. It's part of the sport, but not like injuries you could have prevented by building your players up to a point where they are become more susceptible to hamstring tears, oblique tears, like the muscle issues, because they're too big and they're not stretched out. And so I am kind of interested to see how that plays out this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I think it speaks to, like, you know, obviously, like, Boris in particular was a very Metsy thing. But, like, like, taking a more holistic view of, like, player health and, like, injuries would not be amiss, I think, in baseball in general. Like, you know, we talk about this all the time about how they don't value it in the minor leagues, and I think it affects player development at, like, in every organization. Like, the way that Dominic Smith had to wait until he made a major league salary to get a CPAP machine, and look at the difference, like, in his career trajectory that has made. I think it's made a huge difference. And, like, nutrition and, like things like that. Like, they just don't prioritize these things in the minor leagues, and I think that makes a huge difference. And if they just, and it's because they don't want to spend money. It's because they don't want to spend money with these organizations. And if they just spent, like, it would amount to, like, a few million dollars. Like, it would amount to signing a Jonathan VR every year. If you just, like, redirected some of that money, or, like, you know, spent it in addition. If you just, like, spent that money on, you know, a more holistic view of player health and player development, I think it would make a big difference.
Well, I remember Ty Kelly one time when the whole conversation about minor league pay was happening, he tweeted out a picture of what one of his lunches was, and it was basically a Lunchables. Like, it was like an apple slice, like a sandwich and some crackers.
Yeah.
That's, like, horrible.
No wonder these dudes are eating fast food all the time. Like, it's all they can afford.
And that's all they have time for.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Anyway. So, yeah, that's the Mets. Things are going pretty good so far, but the bullpen and the defense are concerned, but hopefully they'll extend Francisco Lindor, and I'll forget about all of our other problems for a couple weeks. But none of these things stop these baseball-wide problems, you know. Minor league player nutrition is just the start of, you know, these problems that are pervasive throughout baseball that we've talked about extensively on this podcast in various forms. But conveniently, in late February, Kevin Mather, former president of the Seattle Mariners, just said all the quiet parts out loud during a session with the Bellevue Breakfast Rotary Club of all fucking things. This is such a rich dude thing, because, like, these dudes will just say these things because, like, it's what everybody thinks, and they don't think that anybody's recording it, and they think they can just get away with it, so they'll just say it out loud.
Or they're around dudes like them, so they think that's what they want to hear and is what's acceptable, so they don't think there's anything wrong with it because everybody has those same beliefs that you're talking to.
Right. There's, like, no filter on what he's saying, because, like, he genuinely believes this stuff, as does everybody around him, as does everybody like him. So he thinks that this is all okay to say. And someone just happened to be recording, and he didn't notice it. And so we will link the full transcript, which shout out to fellow baseball SB Nation baseball site, team site, Lookout Landing, the Seattle Mariners, yes, SB Nation site. They put the full transcript up way before this was a story. They were on top of this. They broke this. Not Jeff Passan, not Ken Rosenthal, not any of the big media outlets in baseball. No. It was Lookout Landing. They were on top of this from day one. And so they were watching, ooh, like they had people watching the video live, and they were just typing out the transcript, and they put the entire transcript up online, and that's how everybody knew how bad it was. So I will post the full transcript from Lookout Landing, as well as the video from YouTube. Actually, the OG video, I believe, got taken down, not surprisingly, but I think that people have saved it for posterity and posted it on their own, so those versions, I believe, are still available. But like, once literally
recorded, always recorded.
Literally all I could think of, this is terrible, but all I could think of when I was like reading the transcript and like watching the video was like Stefan from SNL being like, this video has everything. Service time manipulation, collusion, racism, general rich guy bullshit. Like, it was literally white dudes, he just said everything out loud, like all the types of stuff that we and like plenty of other people have been pointing out, and like things that in the past have kind of like come out in drips and drabs as like isolated incidents, but we know they aren't really isolated because it's just part of the culture of the game. He just like said it all out loud, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, he talked about Jared Kelenic, former Mets prospect Jared Kelenic, who is now a Mariner. He talked about how they like openly tried to sign him to an extremely like team friendly deal and basically like bullied him and said, like, if you don't sign this, we're going to like manipulate your service time, basically. So that's cool. So Kelenic is now, has he actually filed the grievance? He's going to file a grievance.
God, I hope
Like, he's going to file a grievance. And like,
I think that Mariner should just get punished and have to give him back to the Mets for this nonsense.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, and also, I know the Mariners releasing their statement saying, like, he doesn't, like, speak for us. Like, he was your team president.
He's your team president. Years. If he doesn't speak for you, who speaks for you? Yeah. Who speaks for the Mariners if not the team president? Like, are you kidding me?
It's not, like, problematic at all.
Like, at what? He talked about Kelenic and manipulating his service time. He also, like, I won't say outright admitted to collusion, but like heavily hinted at collusion, because someone asked about, like, this was kind of like an open Q&A, by the way, just setting the stage for this. So like, people were asking him questions and he was answering them way too frankly. So like, someone asked him about Paxton because the Mariners were, you know, in on Paxton. And Paxton was one of those like guys who signed pretty late in the offseason. And so he was talking about how basically, like, with things like that, you have these like this like group of unsigned free agents that like go late into spring. And he basically insinuated that like we, and like, it really heavily depends on who you think of as the we here, because if he's saying we the Mariners, then I guess it's one thing. But like, you could read it as we multiple baseball teams, in which case, like, he's basically admitting to collusion. He kind of says, like, we wait this out, and then their price drops. And then he used the word, like, they come to us hat in hand, I think was the exact phrase he used. Like, basically, they're desperate at that point, and they will sign, like, a very team-friendly, like, a very cheap deal. So he basically insinuated that, like, he waits it out, and, like, the Mariners pick guys, like, that wait until late in spring to sign. So that was, you know, also not great. And
Christmas for the Players Union.
Yep. Oh my God, yeah. It is.
Such Christmas. Who was it?
Exhibit A.
Who was it? Was it Josh Donaldson? I think it was Josh Donaldson. It was. I think Donaldson's one of the player reps, and he said something like, thanks for proving what the Players Union has been saying for years. Thank you for genuinely, like, Josh Donaldson was like, genuinely thank you for saying this, because now we can just, like, now the Players Union can just present this as Exhibit A for everything we've been saying. So he, like, more or less admitted to collusion. And then there was, of course, it's not a rich white guy talking without a heavy dose of racism. And so he talked about how he was basically, so he talked about Iwakuma, who is a beloved player in Seattle, by the way, beloved. And talked about how he was, like, sick of paying for his interpreter and was basically just, like, learn English. Oh, after he stopped paying for his interpreter, his English suddenly got a lot better. Like, you are the worst.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. What is wrong with you?
You're paying $75,000 for a translator when you're paying millions of dollars to everybody else, and you yourself are a multimillionaire, if not billionaire.
Yeah, these interpreters are dropping the bucket.
Are there. Ugh.
And somebody pointed out that their translator was working for the team anyway, so it wasn't like they were paying anybody extra.
Yeah, it's not like Iwakuma had a personal. It's not like Iwakuma had a personal interpreter that he was insisting that the team like carry. No, no, no. It was just the team's interpreter.
But even if he did, like, he like, don't you want to like make him feel welcome?
That's the whole thing. People underestimate the value of a translator. They're just saying, "Oh, the player's saying this. The reporter's saying this. Here's the middleman translating it through." No, I mean, they're there for them off the field during practices, helping them assimilate. If it's a new, because if they're coming from a foreign country, like it's their first year, they're helping them assimilate to the culture of the United States, which is, I won't lie, probably vastly different from the rest, most of the rest of the world. So they have such an unrecognized value, I think, that really left a sour taste in my mouth after, like, in addition to just the general racism of it. It's devaluing interpreters in general and how difficult their jobs are and how detailed their jobs need to be.
Well, and I have a lot of teacher friends. One day we got to talk because everybody's like, oh, why don't the kids just learn English?
And no, oh my God.
They were like, they learn easier in their native language. So they're like, at least, and I'm assuming it's the same thing here. Like, it's easier for them to process information in their native language. So that way he can learn, you know, and the fundamentals of the game or whatever in Japanese, so that way he absorbs it quicker and then could become a better baseball player if he has somebody speaking to him in his own language instead of like, wait, I have to interpret this in English. What are they saying? And then, like, he might not get the mannerism. Like, English is very hard. There's a lot of nuances to English.
People don't realize if you're not a native speaker, how I shouldn't say that because
we have adjectives English is everything.
English is difficult for its native speakers, but coming from another country, like I did my student teaching in an English as a second language class where it was mostly, it was entirely Spanish speaking children, and the little details in English from capitalizations to punctuation to letter sounds and to rule exceptions, like the I before E except after C. Sorry, I could rant about this all day, all month, all year. English is a difficult language to learn, especially if it's not your native language.
And
that's the tweet.
And Iwakuma was not the only target of his remarks on this. He also talked about this was really weird because not weird if you like know how these guys are, but you know, just like in the context of the general interview, like odd. Like he just kind of dropped this out of nowhere. Like he also talked about how Julio Rodriguez, who's one of their other top prospects, like he said that his English was quote not tremendous. Which is just like, you're insulting like a young, like, is he a teenager? I think he might still be a teenager. Like a very young, like a 19-year-old kid who's trying to learn English and saying his English is not true. What the hell is wrong with you? And of course, like, so Julio Rodriguez clearly knew enough English to make a fantastic meme in response to this. This was so good. So Julio Rodriguez immediately took to Twitter, and like, if you guys aren't familiar with the meme, the "and I took that personally" meme, there's
Michael Jordan,
like, there's like a it must be like a screenshot from an interview where Michael Jordan says at one point, "and I took that personally." So Julio Rodriguez, like, the second after like this Mather news broke and like we saw all the quotes for the interview, Julio Rodriguez photoshopped his own face over Michael Jordan's face, "and I took that personally." So like, clearly he knows, like, these guys know what's going on. They know what's going on. And it was a Seeger's wife who tweeted like, "so do we put our house in Seattle up for sale now?" Or like, like, the players, like, you just took your mask off for the players. They know who they're playing for now, and they are not happy about it. Like,
and they're gonna have fun bringing grievances. Yeah, and I hope they do.
Was it Marco Gonzalez who said he's not cool?
Yeah. I think it was.
Like, they were just absolutely, like, roasting him. And they can, because they have a platform.
Right.
And, like, so, like, your dirty laundry is gonna get aired. There's no getting around it.
Yep. And for what it's worth, like, a bunch of journalists, like, and prospect guys and people who have interacted with Julio Rodriguez have, like, immediately took to Twitter to say his English is really great and he's worked really hard on improving it. But, I mean, like, that's really good, but that shouldn't matter, honestly. It shouldn't matter whether his English is great or, quote, not tremendous. Like, if his English is not tremendous, who cares? Who cares? Like... He's here to play baseball.
English is not the official language of the United States. It is not. So take your English-only nonsense and shove it.
He's here to play baseball, and he's very good at it. So, like, who cares?
I hate the monolinguistic bent of this country.
It's awful. Like, you are, like, they are not obligated to learn the language. They do because it makes things easier for them. But they are not actually obligated to learn the language to do their job. And they should have interpreters. And it's awful and racist that he said these things out loud, but it's not surprising.
Well, and I tweeted this, but I don't know if everybody knows it, but the Rotary didn't allow women until 1989.
Cool. Oh, hey, that's what I was
born.
So that's
what his audience is.
Yeah, he's just in his, like, boys' club.
Yeah. This club that didn't allow women until after I was born.
It's basically like a Mickey Mouse country club, like, bullshit.
A gentleman's club.
A gentleman's club.
Yeah, basically what it was. And so, yeah, I'm sure you could kind of infer what that audience looks like.
Yeah. And I mean, like, so all of the, like, that was kind of the worst stuff. But, like, there's a lot of stuff in there that we don't have time to cover on this podcast, including, like, he talked about how, like, he, like, there's not a lot of parking around the stadium. And so, like, he owned the parking garage so he could, like, charge people a bunch of money to park there. And he, like, laughed that off. And, like, it's just, like, the worst rich guy bullshit imaginable. Like, it's really bad. All of it is really bad.
Well, at least he resigned.
Yep.
That's the silver lining of this.
So he resigned because, like...
But every other club... thinks and acts like this, so
exactly.
So that's really a silver lining.
Yeah, there is every team president. There's no heroes.
This is every team president thinks like this, and like he just said it out loud, so he had to resign. But this is like, again, like we've been saying with Porter and Callaway, and like obviously these are different transgressions, and we're not trying to compare the transgressions. But what I am saying is. These types of attitudes are endemic in the sport, and like just getting rid of the one guy is not going to solve the problem, even though like obviously it's good that they're getting rid of him, but like
no, he got fired for getting caught saying it.
Exactly. Yes.
He didn't get fired for actually
because they're actually doing it.
Yeah,
exactly. By the way, now seems like a good time to remind our audience that Mickey Callaway still has a job.
Yeah, I said it when this first happened, and like they said this is going to be a really short investigation. I'm like, no, they're going to be waiting for this to like just slide back under the radar and nobody notices. And that's exactly what has happened.
Even though they had an update where more women came forward.
Yep.
I haven't followed the Angel Spring training, but he's in camp right now, right? Oh, no, he's suspended. No, he's suspended until they finish this.
Yeah, he's suspended.
He, though, is he like there in a Bobby Valentine-esque mustache?
I have no idea. On that? Probably not, but I don't know. Yeah, he still has a job, though. Still officially employed. They remember Pepperidge Farm remembers when they said this investigation would be fast.
Yeah.
Here we are. It is March 9th now.
There are pictures. There's texts. I don't know what evidence they could possibly need.
Like Kellyanne said, the investigation will last exactly as long as it takes for this to go away and for people to forget. And then that's when it will end.
So we're here to make you not forget.
Yeah, please don't forget. Mickey Calloway still has a job. That investigation has seemingly gone nowhere. No one's there. There's been no like progress, updates, nothing. There's been nothing.
The updated Athletic article was somehow worse than the original, and the original was pretty bad.
Yep. So if anything, things have gotten worse, but we've heard nothing about the investigation. So that's that.
It's like, well, if you're investigating, here you go. Just read the Athletic article. There's pictures.
So it's literally public information.
There's your evidence right there. Sweet Dickie on a cracker.
Google is free. There's your investigation. Google.com. Crimes.xlsx. Good Lord. We laugh so we don't cry, folks. This is what's going on.
I'm actually like, my head's on the table right now and I'm almost in tears.
Like, what is there left to say at this point? Like, it's just like the capper on just like an awful, awful off season, pretty much. And it's not even the off season anymore. It's spring training.
It's spring training. Yeah. So, you know.
All that's left to say is do better, everybody. Do better.
How can you not be romantic about baseball?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Will Mickey Calloway sexually harass next?
Yeah. Anyway, in an effort to end the show on the on a happy note, like we always do, we will do walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I have two, but they're related, so I feel like I could get away with it. My parents got their first dose of their vaccine.
Woo!
They got the Moderna. So they're both feeling good. They said it felt like, you know, getting a flu shot, like your arm hurt, but they said it wasn't anything bad. But apparently the second shot is the bad one. But so it's kind of frustrating that you have to treat it like winning the lottery. They were calling like every pharmacy, getting on every wait list. And then finally I was like, surprise, we have an appointment on like 2 days from now. So
it's like trying to get tickets to a Beyonce concert.
It's insane. So like that, it was just such a relief that they got it and that they're guaranteed to get the next one in 3 weeks, I think.
Yes, excellent.
So yeah, that, like, you know, just the stress of like sending all my mom, like, this opened up, like, did you look at this, like, what about the Javits Center? But it is, because my dad has bad feet and he has heart issues, so he really can't stand. So if there's a long wait, there's no way he could get a vaccine in like a big place where the wait times are like 3 hours, even an hour. Like, he just legit cannot stand for that long. So the fact that they got it like in a pharmacy, they could walk in 15 minutes, they were good. That was good. So now today, King Cuomo, as my friend calls him, announced like a new phase of people who are eligible, and I'm in the eligible group because I'm a librarian.
Yay!
And like my first reaction, of course, was like, yes. Like, I wanted to have a party at my desk. I'm like texting like everybody I know. Like, my sister works in a library, so I was like, we could get it. But then, you know, like I saw an article online about, you know, feeling guilty about it because I do kind of feel like I'm cutting the line. But
no, don't.
Like, I know they say you don't, like, you're helping the herd immunity and, like, you know, the governor saying I'm eligible, but I don't know. It's still, it's a weird feeling. Like, I'm super excited. Like, I've never been this excited about getting a shot in my entire life, but because I hate needles. I'm terrified of needles. But now the fun begins of just trying to get an appointment and not feel guilty about it.
I mean, and don't feel guilty about it because you are an essential worker. You're coming into contact. See, that's the thing with librarians. I'm also a librarian.
Yes.
The thing is, we're coming into contact with the public right now.
Yes.
One of the libraries I've been working at has been open since July.
So, I have been open since July.
Yeah. So we've both been open since July. I think we opened around the same time.
Yeah.
So we've been around people. People have been exposed to us. We've been exposed to people, and it's not like we just have the shields because we're helping people with problems and questions. Like mm-hmm. I know at my library, I've helped a lot of people with unemployment applications, which is another rough thing. But like you're near the person.
Yeah,
so
there's no way
helping
like, you
them.
Can't stand back and just be like pointing at the screen. Like
yeah.
It does them no good. And, you know, like, for me, I work with kids. I can't just be like, okay, it's over there. Like, I usually walk them to the shelves, show them where the book is.
Yeah.
They're never going to find it. They're five. They're not going to know where to look on the shelf. So sometimes I'll point them in the general direction so they can find it themselves. Like, I'll walk them over and be like, this is the shelf. I'm like, you have better eyes. Can you find it? But, you know, I do. And there was an article saying it's more about how it's been rolled out.
Yes,
that we feel the guilt that it's not available to everybody. So, but I am
excited. The whole thing, they're rolling it out in phases. And
yeah.
I think the United States has a severe lack of patience overall as a country.
Well,
you have to be first.
May, so the fact that they said March 17th, I was like, wow, I feel like there's an end in sight. It's like, especially, you know, going over everything that was happening this time last year. And it's still so fresh
exactly.
in my mind. And then now to see how far we've come and that there is an end, like maybe not like a hard line and like it'll magically go away. But there's definitely like light at the end of the tunnel. And
yes.
I think I desperately needed that, too. And to like we were talking about today at work. I was like, I've missed the patrons. Like,
yeah,
it's been so quiet. And the other day I helped a kid find a book and he was so excited. And you feed off that energy and that had been lacking.
Yes.
It was hard going into work and it like you need that. You need that interaction every day. So I'm hoping now as more people get vaccinated, more people feel comfortable coming back and, you know, I'll be just happier. Because, you know, I just feel like I haven't been doing my job because there's been nobody to help. And it's just been really upsetting. So walk off when I'm happy. I am happy. I promise.
No, and that's great. And you shouldn't feel guilty about it. Who I think should feel guilty about it is these people that are charging others to hold their spot in the line. They're asking for money to do this.
Oh,
I think that's terrible.
Oh,
at least
no.
In New Jersey. Yeah, New Jersey's a mess. There's like a Facebook group with that going on. People are like lying about the conditions they have so they can get the shot. It's a mess here.
Ooh.
It's just a mess.
Yeah.
Typical New Jersey corruption nonsense. Sorry. We're totally ruining the walk-off wins right now. Sorry.
I mean, I'm trying to think of it like everybody that, like Linda said, every single person that gets the shot, regardless of whether they're telling the truth or lying about, like, whatever their situation is, like, helps the herd immunity. So it's good. It's a net good in the end. But yeah, it does suck, like, that some people are, you know, gaming the system. But there's always, like, no matter what the thing is, there's always going to be people who game the system and we just have to kind of put up with it. And like most people are not gaming the system. So that's
and
good.
It also like it's been hard, too, because I'm one of the few who have been working with people. So I always felt like I was the problem. Like if like I wanted to see somebody. I'm like, wait, I'm the one who's been exposed. If anybody would be exposed, it would have been me. And because I'm the only one interacting with people. So
but that's the other thing. You shouldn't feel guilty about that because that was a decision above your head. Like I know when my one library opened back up, we're still not comfortable working.
No.
Like being working at all. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
But we made the most of it. Thankfully, everybody's been good, but you just never know. And so just to have that dark cloud hanging over your head is just going to be a tremendous relief. And so, but now the fun begins of trying to win the lottery and find an appointment. But
you'll find one.
Yeah,
I'm sure
eventually.
You will.
Yeah,
eventually. Yeah, it'll take some, you know, some patience and some, you know, sitting at your computer and hitting refresh every 5 minutes, but it'll happen.
Did send out a form saying they would work on helping secure us appointments. So
that's
good. They said there's no guarantee, but they're going to at least try. So I'm like, I'll try anything. I'll put my name on the list. So we'll say, fingers crossed.
Good luck.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you.
My walk-off win is just that it feels like spring this week outside.
Yes.
I am so happy that the weather is warming up. Like, I mean, I always dislike winter, so this is always going to be a thing for me. But, like, I feel like it was extra this year because of everything that's been going on. And, like, you know, anytime you have, like, seasonal-related depression or seasonal-related, like, blues or whatever you want to call it, like, it's been made infinitely worse by, you know, gesticulates wildly at everything. So, like, just the fact that it's, like, warmer weather outside. Like, Michael and I went for a walk today, and it just, like, instantly lifted my mood. Like, just seeing, like seeing people outside and, like, children on the playground and, like even that and, like, birds singing. Like, it just made me feel, like, so much better about life and everything. And, like, you know, I'm thinking a lot about the vaccine, and, like, this week I had two family members, two at-risk family members, my 96-year-old grandfather and my at-risk uncle, like, both got vaccine appointments this week, finally, after trying for, like, weeks. So, like, I also feel like it's kind of like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I feel like spring is kind of, like, you know, almost like a metaphor for that, like, things are warming up, like, the earth is coming back to life, and, like, maybe we can have some semblance of a life again. There's, like, a light at the end of the tunnel, and the fact that it was 70 degrees today and I got to go outside and go for a walk just, like, made me feel so much better about everything. We walked to the library to return two books.
Yeah.
So that's actually, yeah. So we had two books. One of them was overdue. Oops.
Tisk.
DC doesn't have fines. So
yeah, that's just because there. Are you guys still fine free?
Yeah, we're fine free.
One of my libraries is still fine free through April.
Yep. So yeah, that was nice. We just, like, got to take a walk to the library, and just, like, I got to enjoy the weather, and it's going to be warm this week. So I'm going to try to do that more this week. Get out and enjoy the spring weather, and just, like, baseball's coming back. It's spring. Like, it just puts me instantly in a better mood. So that's my walk-off win.
It really does. It makes all the difference.
It does. And now's the time. Now I feel like, okay, now spring can come. We're out of February.
Yes.
You know me, I'm a big four seasons person. I do like winter, even though this one was a rough one. But now it's March. Spring can come. It's allowed.
Yes. Well, you know, this might sound cheesy, but it's kind of symbolic, too. Like, a harsh winter and then, like, hope and life after, like, all this awful, awful, like...
Renewal.
Yes, renewal. Like, there's hope now. And, like, the fact that it was a hard winter was just, like, the capper on everything. Like, of course.
Of course it's snowed a ton. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. About all the year, like, it was obviously going to be this year. So I hope, like, none of this, like, bullshit, like, winter into, like, June, and then it all of a sudden becomes summer. Like, no. I want actual spring.
That'd be nice.
Like, it snowed on, like, May 7th last year. Like, none of that. No, let's cut that out.
No, thank you. No, thank you, please.
I want like 70 degrees, no humidity, sunshine for a good 2 months, and then it can be summer.
Yeah. Yes. I'm very looking forward to my first spring in DC with the cherry blossoms.
Oh, cherry blossoms.
I cannot wait to just like go so strolling jealous. Along the tidal basin and just like look at the blossoms. It's going to be great. So I'm very excited
Send
about that.
Pictures.
Yes, I will. Absolutely. I will. So yeah, that is the show this week.
I didn't do my walk-off win.
Oh, wait, you didn't? I'm sorry.
Rude.
Kellyanne, what's your walk-off win? I'm so sorry.
I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Baseball's back.
Yay! I'm so Even sorry, Kellyanne. Baseball. I thought that like you and Linda were talking about libraries and like I kind of like got lost you that you hadn't done
together.
I did. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
I feel like a bad person.
You're not.
Oh.
Hey, I got it in there. Baseball's back. That's
baseball's
it.
Back.
Kept it short, kept it sweet.
Yep. That's a good like after to come after mine. That's good because like spring is back, baseball's back.
Yes.
It's very good. So yes, that is the show this week. You should go to AmazingAvenue.com. We're still knee deep in our season preview series. We're previewing every player on the roster from like now until opening day. We're going to run a couple of them a day. Every single day we're doing game threads for all the spring training games. So come join us to chat about Mets baseball, which is finally back. And I'm doing the King of Spring Training contest, which has returned with a vengeance this year after being cut short last year when they ended spring training on March 14th or whatever it was. So I actually get to do
the 1 year.
Yeah, I actually get to do a full King of Spring Training contest this year again for the first time since 2019. So that's very exciting. So you can see that weekly we'll be updating. And then finally, after spring training ends, we'll do a final poll. We're going to resume weekly podcasts. So everything's ramping up for the season. So go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of that content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Kellyanne?
I'm at LRBELLAREBEE.
Yes.
I have fun spelling that every time.
Exactly. You can follow each of us on Twitter and you can join Kellyanne in the Amazing Avenue comments. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.